KSDP 830 AM Sandpoint, K201DA King Cove, KFPS False Pass.
From New York, this is Democracy Now!
He's saying he can use the military to start deporting people. We think that's absolutely wrong. It would be illegal. The law is very clear that you need an invasion from a foreign government. This is not an invasion from foreign government.
The U.S. deported 137 Venezuelan immigrants to El Salvador after President Trump invoked the Alien Enemies Act of 1798. A judge ordered the deportation flights to turn around, but the Trump administration ignored the order. We'll speak with Lee Gallant of the ACLU, which sued Trump. But first, we look at Trump's attack on the rule of law and his speech Friday at the Justice Department, where he threatened to target his political enemies, naming names. We'll speak to Maryland Democratic Congress member Jamie Raskin, a former constitutional law professor.
No other president in American history has stood at the Department of Justice to proclaim an agenda of criminal prosecution and retaliation against his political foes.
Plus, we look at why some Democrats are calling on Chuck Schumer to step down as the top Democrat in the Senate after he voted with Republicans to avert a government shutdown. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Yemen's health ministry says at least 53 people were killed and dozens of others wounded over the weekend after the United States launched nearly four dozen airstrikes against the Houthis. More than 30 civilians are reportedly among the dead, including four children and a woman killed when U.S. bombs struck two houses in Yemen's northern Sada province. The Trump administration said it began the attacks after the Houthis resumed drone and missile attacks on ships in the Red Sea and Gulf of Aden, saying they're acting in solidarity with Palestinians under Israeli siege in Gaza. A Houthi spokesman Sunday promised to continue the strikes.
With the help of God Almighty, the Yemeni armed forces will continue to impose a naval blockade on the Israeli enemy and ban its ships in the declared zone of operations until aid and basic needs are delivered to the Gaza Strip.
On social media, President Trump vowed to use, quote, overwhelming lethal force like nothing have seen before, unquote, against Yemen. A Trump administration official told reporters the attacks on Yemen might continue for weeks. The bombings come even though Congress has not declared war on Yemen. President Trump's invoked an 18th century law to order the deportation of Venezuelan nationals from the United States. On Saturday, the Trump administration flew more than 260 immigrants to El Salvador, including over 130 people accused but not convicted of having ties to the gang Tren de Aragua, which Trump has labeled a terrorist organization. The flights came despite a temporary restraining order from U.S. District Judge James Boasberg, who ordered any deportation flights that were currently in the air to turn around. The Washington Post reports three flights bound for El Salvador arrived after the judge's order. Salvadoran President Nayib Bukele, a Trump ally, shared video on social media showing deportees arriving at a notorious supermax prison where guards have been accused of gross human rights abuses. President Bukele tweeted, "Oopsie, too late," adding the face with tears of joy emoji. The comment was then retweeted by Secretary of State Marco Rubio and White House Communications Director Stephen Chung. Trump's order is based on the rarely invoked Alien Enemies Act of 1798, which was last used to justify the arrest and internment of 30,000 Japanese, German, and Italian nationals during World War II. We'll have more on this case later in the broadcast with the ACLU's Lee Gallant, who says President Trump's use of the Alien Enemies Act is flat out lawless. The federal judge Boasberg will hold a hearing on why the Trump administration ignored his order today. Meanwhile, the New York Times reports the Trump administration could target citizens from up to 43 countries with new travel restrictions that would be broader than those imposed during Trump's first term. A draft list includes 11 countries whose citizens would be flatly barred from U.S. entry: Afghanistan, Bhutan, Cuba, Iran, Libya, North Korea, Somalia, Sudan, Syria, Venezuela, and Yemen. U.S. immigration agents have arrested another Palestinian student who participated in Gaza solidarity protests at Columbia University. Laka Cordia, who is from the occupied West Bank, had been on a lapsed student visa. Separately, an Indian national left the U.S. after her enrollment and student visa was unlawfully revoked. Ranjani Srinivasan was expected to graduate this year with a doctoral degree from Columbia's Graduate School of Architecture, Planning, and Preservation. Her lawyer said she was arrested the night students took over what's now known as Hinds Hall, though she did not actually participate in that protest. Meanwhile, video has emerged showing the arrest of Mahmoud Khalil last Saturday by plainclothes officers who did not identify themselves. The video was filmed by his 8-month pregnant wife, Noor Abdullah, whose voice you're hearing in this clip.
Can you please specify what agency is taking him, please? Excuse me, they're not talking to me. I don't know. Excuse me, the lawyer would like to speak to somebody. Oh my God, they're literally like running away from me.
His wife is an American citizen. Mahmoud Khalil had a green card. On Friday, Khalil's legal team filed a motion seeking his release on bail. He's being held at an ICE immigration facility in Louisiana. More large-scale protests took place across the country over the weekend demanding ICE release and then defending the right to free speech. Here in New York, Grant Miner, the president of the Student Workers of Columbia, UAW, addressed crowds just days after Miner was fired by Columbia for taking part in anti-war campus protests.
I was expelled and fired for participating in protests. This is a campaign of fear. The purpose of this is to cause fear and to quash the movement to free Palestine on our campuses and across the nation. I'm here to tell you that labor, that students, that everybody here is going to fight back.
The far-right pro-Israeli government group Batar has taken credit for Mahmoud Khalil's arrest and boasts it has a deportation list containing thousands of names that it sent to the Trump administration. Meanwhile, Swarthmore College in Pennsylvania suspended one student as it issued sanctions earlier this month for 15 pro-Palestinian student protesters. Swarthmore announced the penalties days after Trump threatened to rescind federal funding for schools that allow so-called illegal protests. At least 40 people are dead after hundreds of powerful storms tore through the southern and midwestern United States over the weekend. The storms knocked out power to hundreds of thousands of utility customers and triggered wildfires in Oklahoma. This comes after the Trump administration fired some 2,000 workers at the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, NOAA, including hundreds of forecasters at the National Weather Service. Elon Musk's Department of Government Efficiency is working to shutter NOAA offices, including a Hawaiian climate research station that since 1956 has measured steadily rising levels of atmospheric carbon dioxide. Chuck Schumer is facing mounting calls to step down as the Democrat Senate leader after he voted in favor of a Republican spending package Friday, which has been described as a blank check for the White House to keep defunding and dismantling government services and agencies. Groups including Indivisible and Pass the Torch have joined the calls for Schumer to step aside. On Friday, 11 young activists with Sunrise Movement were arrested at Schumer's D.C. office as they urged him not to, quote, compromise on our lives and futures, unquote, ahead of the vote. The other Democratic senators who voted with Schumer and the Republicans were Catherine Cortez Masto, Dick Durbin, John Fetterman, Kirsten Gillibrand, Maggie Hassan, Gary Peters, Brian Schatz, Jean Shaheen, and Independent Senator Angus King. Calls have also been mounting for New York Congressmember Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez to challenge Schumer in his next primary election as she led the charge to oppose the GOP spending bill. She spoke on CNN Friday.
This turns the federal government into a slush fund for Donald Trump and Elon Musk. It sacrifices congressional authority, and it is deeply partisan. And so to me, it is almost unthinkable why Senate Democrats would vote to hand the few pieces of leverage that we have away for free when we've been sent here to protect Social Security, protect Medicaid, and protect Medicare.
President Trump signed an executive order Friday gutting smaller federal offices, including the Minority Business Development Agency, the U.S. Interagency Council on Homelessness, and the Institute of Museum and Library Services. Also on Trump's chopping block, the U.S. Agency for Global Media, which funds the overseas broadcasters Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, and Radio Free Asia. For the first time in over eight decades, the Voice of America stopped broadcasting over the weekend after announcing it would fire nearly all of its 1,300 workers. Trump's cuts will also silence radio and TV Marti broadcasts into Cuba that have historically been used to attempt to overthrow the Cuban government. Separately, Trump signed an executive order Friday revoking Biden-era rules strengthening tribal sovereignty and self-determination for all 574 federally recognized tribes. President Trump addressed employees of the Department of Justice on Friday in a rambling, rare address riddled with lies and personal grievances. For over an hour, Trump assailed his opponents as scum, castigated federal judges as corrupt, and labeled news outlets that criticize his administration illegal.
I believe that CNN and MSDNC, who literally write 97.6% bad about me, are political arms of the Democrat Party. And in my opinion, they're really corrupt and they're illegal. What they do is illegal.
Trump also used his visit to the Great Hall of the Justice Department to heap praise on Aileen Cannon, the Trump-appointed U.S. District Judge in Florida who last year threw out a criminal case against Trump over his mishandling of classified documents. We'll have more on Trump's highly unusual speech at the Justice Department after headlines when we speak to Congressmember Jamie Raskin. In Serbia, hundreds of thousands of protesters flooded the streets of the capital, Belgrade, Saturday to demand justice for 15 people killed in the northern city of Novi Sad last November when a train station roof collapsed on them. The disaster triggered months of anti-government rallies calling on President Aleksandar Vučić to resign amidst accusations of widespread negligence and corruption. The student-led protests have swelled to include teachers, farmers, and workers.
We are waiting for authorities to be held accountable for what happened in Novi Sad, as we believe it is all about the irresponsibility of the state bodies.
Today we will demonstrate our dissent to show how many people will come out to show what we are striving for a normal state, a state of law, without corruption, lying, media pressures, persecutions, expulsions, unjust sentencing, etc.
Serbia's government denied reports from rights groups that police deployed a military-grade sonic weapon against protesters. Footage from Saturday's rally shows a sudden noise directed at protesters triggered panic and a brief stampede. And Vice President J.D. Vance was met with a chorus of boos as he attended a concert at the Kennedy Center Thursday evening. The audience loudly booed as Vance and his wife took their seats for a performance of the National Symphony Orchestra. President Trump, who last month dissolved the Kennedy Center's board of directors and named himself as chair, is expected to visit the renowned arts venue for a board meeting today. In related news, Shelley C. Lowe, the first Native American chair of the National Endowment of the Humanities, has stepped down from her post, quote, at the direction of President Trump, unquote. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The United States is moving closer to a constitutional crisis as the Trump administration refuses multiple court orders, while the president vows to take revenge on political enemies and escalates his attack on the press. On Saturday, the U.S. deported 137 Venezuelan immigrants to El Salvador after President Trump invoked the Alien Enemies Act of 1798, which was last used to justify the arrest and internment of 30,000 Japanese, German, and Italian nationals during World War II. Meanwhile, Colombia student protest leader Mahmoud Khalil remains locked up in an ICE jail in Louisiana for taking part in student protests against Israel's war on Gaza. A second Colombia student protester has also been arrested. On Friday, President Trump spoke at the Department of Justice and threatened to take revenge on his political enemies.
Our predecessors turned this Department of Justice into the Department of Injustice, but I stand before you today to declare that those days are over. And they are never going to come back. They're never coming back. So now, as the chief law enforcement officer in our country, I will insist upon and demand full and complete accountability for the wrongs and abuses that have occurred.
In a moment, we'll be joined by Democratic Congressmember Jamie Raskin of Maryland. But first, let's turn to a part of his response to Trump's speech. Raskin spoke outside the Department of Justice Friday.
In the 18th century, the American Revolution overthrew the kings, the lords, and the feudal barons to establish a nation where we would have a nation where all would be equal under the law. As Tom Paine put it, in the monarchies, the king is law, but in the democracies, the law is king. But amazingly, we now have a president in the 21st century who believes he's a king, and he believes that the king is the law once again. The first 7 weeks of this radical experiment in neo-monarchism has been a disaster for the rule of law and for the Constitution and for the First Amendment. There have been 120 federal cases filed against Donald Trump all over the country, and he has lost already in more than 40 courtrooms across the land where temporary restraining orders and preliminary injunctions have been issued against his lawless attack on the Constitution.
That was Congressmember Jamie Raskin of Maryland speaking outside the DOJ on Friday, responding to Trump's speech. He's joining us now from Tacoma Park, Maryland. Congressmember Raskin is the top Democrat on the House Judiciary Committee and a former constitutional law professor. During Trump's first presidency, Raskin served as a floor manager and the Democrats' lead prosecutor for Trump's second impeachment after the January 6th Capitol insurrection. He was also a member of the House January 6th committee investigating the Capitol insurrection. In January, Biden gave preemptive pardons to Raskin and other members of the January 6th House committee. Earlier today, President Trump claimed the pardons are invalid because he said they were done by AutoPen. Congressmember Jamie Raskin, welcome back to Democracy Now! Why don't we start there? With President Trump saying all the pardons that he issued that were done by AutoPen are invalid, that would include you, your response.
First of all, thank you for having me, Amy, and that was the first time I got to hear a clip from our press conference. What you couldn't hear there was the constant berating and heckling of mega counter protesters who showed up. We were being drowned out by a guy with a bullhorn. I wanted to borrow his bullhorn because we didn't have a sound system with us. But I appreciate your running that clip where, you know, we went and appeared opposite Donald Trump. But I had not seen that Donald Trump is claiming that the pardon rendered by President Biden was somehow illegitimate because of the kind of pen that was used. This sounds like classic Donald Trump stuff. The pardons, of course, were necessary because of Trump's promises to prosecute Benny Thompson and Liz Cheney, less so the rest of us, but they'd already made their moves against Liz Cheney. And I have no reason to think that those are not valid any more than the humiliating and atrocious pardons that that Donald Trump gave to nearly 1,600 insurrectionists, including violent felons who viciously attacked our police officers on January 6th.
So if you can talk about this almost unprecedented speech, it is very rare for a president to go to the Department of Justice and give a speech like this. I think Clinton did around some anti-crime bill, which when many would dispute was actually an anti-crime bill. Obama went to say goodbye to the attorney general. But to give an hour address, naming names of targets, talking about the press as enemies of the people, if you can respond overall to what he said.
Well, it was a typical rambling and hate-filled diatribe by Donald Trump. No speech like that has ever taken place at the U.S. Department of Justice, which has existed since 1870, when it was set up to try to enforce the Reconstruction Amendments to the Constitution against the Ku Klux Klan and against white supremacists and insurrectionists and secessionists. Nobody has ever taken a sledgehammer to the traditional boundary between independent criminal law enforcement on the one side and presidential political will and power on the other. But here, Trump made it clear that he views these people as his lawyers. They are reporting to him according to his corrupt unitary executive theory. And far from staying out of the business of deciding who will be prosecuted and who will be let go, he's going to superintend the whole machinery of the Department of Justice.
I want to go to a clip from President Trump speaking at the Department of Justice.
I believe that CNN and MSDNC, who literally write 97.6% bad about me, are political arms of the Democrat Party. And in my opinion, they're really corrupt and they're illegal. What they do is illegal. These networks and these newspapers are really no different than a highly paid political operative. And it has to stop. It has to be illegal. It's influencing judges. And it's really changing law. And it just cannot be legal. I don't believe it's legal.
So that is President Trump speaking at the Justice Department. Of course, he is sued ABC, he has sued CBS, he has sued the Des Moines Register, because he has the backing of the wealthiest person on earth, Elon Musk. He could do endless lawsuits, and whether or not they win, that's not the point, but he could just wipe out one news institution after another, Congressmember Raskin.
Well, he's obviously frustrated because he's losing everywhere in court on everything from the birthright citizenship executive order, which is blatantly unconstitutional, to the spending freeze, to the sacking of thousands of probationary employees. And so he's frustrated. So he says it's got to be illegal for the media to be covering his defeats and to be trying to expose the various constitutional violations of his administration. Of course, it's completely lawful and protected by the First Amendment. And he's just operating out of the authoritarian playbook, which says that the first thing you do when you get in is you crack down on the free press. And he's been doing that in numerous ways. He's been ordering the FCC to go after ABC, CBS, NBC, anybody who displeases him in any way. But he's also been personally suing media entities. There was a shakedown of $15 million against ABC because he was unhappy with coverage there. And now he's got a $20 billion lawsuit against CBS, not even because of anything they said about him, but because he thought that the coverage of Kamala Harris was too positive.
It was about, a 60 Minutes interview, which in all news media, you do an hour an interview and you play 10 minutes. So things like her sneezing were taken out. And he said that was used to affect the election.
Of course, you know, Fox News operates completely as an ideological arm of the Republican Party and of the Trump cult. And there's nothing unconstitutional about that. You know, it's totally fine for a newspaper entity to be endorsing Harris or Trump or what have you. So he's just absolutely confused on the point.
Talk about the naming of names, everyone from, oh, Norm Eisen to the organization Crew that sues over corruption in government, to the Democratic lawyer Mark Elias, to the prosecutor Mark Pomerantz, Pomerantz who worked for Alvin Bragg, he named him as well, the Manhattan DA. What it means for the president of the United States to name check these people and talk about going after them?
Well, Trump has embarked upon exceedingly unpopular policy moves, including, you know, an $888 billion cut to Medicaid, increasing attacks on Social Security coming from Elon Musk, a gutting of federal departments and agencies promoting environmental protection, promoting health research, promoting anti-disease campaigns. And so the only way to try to protect these maneuvers is to shut down a free press and disable the lawyers who are in court every day holding them to account. And understand, Amy, we are winning in court every single day against the lawlessness, most recently against this completely illegal move to deport people outside of the provisions of immigration law by invoking the Alien Enemies Act of 1798, which requires that America be at war or be in the midst of an invasion. And we are not being invaded. And the Congress of the United States, which I have the privilege of serving in, has not declared war on Venezuela.
So let's go into that. Trump invoking that 18th century law in order to deport Venezuelan nationals from the United States. On Saturday, they flew, the Trump administration, more than 260 immigrants, including 130 people accused but not convicted of the being a member of the Venezuelan gang Tren de Aragua, which Trump has labeled a terrorist organization. The flights came despite a temporary restraining order from U.S. District Judge James Boasberg, who ordered any of these deportation flights that were currently in the air to be turned around. One of them was still on the ground. The Washington Post reports the three flights bound for El Salvador arrived after the judge's order. It looks like Salvador, this maximum security prison, which is ultimately run by the Trump ally, Salvadoran President Nayib Bukele, guilty of mass human rights abuses. It looks like this judge is holding a hearing today about why they disregarded his ruling. Can you talk about the significance of this? The same thing happened with the Brown University professor, the kidney doctor, who was sent back despite the judge ruling she should be allowed to at least be her case be heard and she should not be deported.
James Boasberg is an excellent judge in the District of Columbia, federal judge. He's also very conservative, and this is a pattern we note now that it goes across Democratic and Republican appointees, the same with, you know, a bunch of prosecutors who have resigned rather than participate in a corrupt scheme like the effort to absolve and exculpate Mayor Adams. But Boasberg's order was completely flouted and violated by the Trump administration and by the president of El Salvador, who gloated and basically mocked the judicial order online, saying, oopsie, too late. And I think that was retweeted by, I think it was Elon Musk who retweeted it with some glee. But look, you're messing with federal court judges who intervene in a situation like this only when they believe there is imminent harm to people being threatened and when they think that there is a probable likelihood of success on the merits of the case. And I think it was shown to his satisfaction that there was all kinds of imminent harm being threatened by these deportations outside of the immigration law system that we've got by invoking the Alien Enemies Act from 1798, which was last used during World War II to round up Japanese and Japanese American citizens in the internment. So I don't know. It'll be very interesting to see what Judge Boasberg does at this point, because as the president of El Salvador, the corrupt and human rights violating president of El Salvador said, oopsie, too late, when it was very clear that they had the order to bring those people back and let them go through the normal process. We have no idea who was part of the contingent being deported.
And Rubio, the Secretary of State, retweeted the oopsie. Now, I want to ask you about Mahmoud Khalil. There have been mass protests across the country for this Palestinian graduate student who is here on a green card, his wife 8 months pregnant. She is a U.S. citizen, to be released. Can you talk about what's happened to him? He's now still in Louisiana ICE detention. What you're calling for?
Well, we're calling for respect for the rule of law and for the First Amendment and for due process. And nothing more than that. I would hope, I would assume that people who support the freedom of speech and due process would be saying this is a completely unacceptable situation. First of all, when he was picked up, they were saying that he had a student visa, which he did not. He's a permanent resident, a green card holder, who has all of the same First Amendment rights that a U.S. citizen has. And so you can disagree with his speech. You can agree with his speech, but in any event, he was picked up for his speech, not given due process under our immigration law system, and then deported and taken out of state. And that's just an intolerable situation. And if it can be done to him, it can be done to every other permanent resident. And indeed, because he's never been charged with anything, there have never been criminal charges, and he's not being charged with anything now, it creates danger for everybody, both non-citizens and citizens alike. And of course, that's the history of this, Amy. If you go back to the Alien and Sedition Acts from the 1790s, Thomas Jefferson was able to observe, along with other people who were the targets of the Alien and Sedition Acts, that the attack on immigrants very quickly becomes an attack on citizens, as the incumbent party thinks that they're absolutely invulnerable and they can jail people and prosecute people just for being in the political opposition.
So can you talk about some of the things you're calling for? Calling on people to submit an open record request to DOJ for your own data, for people's own data, to see what they have on you, like Social Security, student loans, et cetera, the meaning of this. And your overall, as a constitutional lawyer, the role of the richest man on earth, of Elon Musk, firing thousands of people using his own social media platform X to do this. What role does he have in the U.S. government?
Well, we don't know exactly what role he has. That's an excellent question, because they're very slippery and elusive about this. Sometimes the president describes him as the head of DOJ, as the leader of DOJ. In court, they've said he's not involved in administrative capacity with DOJ. He's just an advisor to the president. So we'd like to know. We did get this victory in court last week, where a federal judge determined that DOJ is a federal agency and they cannot slime away from that reality. It is a federal agency. That means that they are subject to FOIA and to the Privacy Act. And I immediately sent in a request for all of the private records of mine, private data of mine, that DOJ has. And we, under FOIA and under the Privacy Act, we all have that right to find out what information they've got from Social Security, from the Department of Education, if there's college loans, if there's military service, whatever it might be. All of that belongs to the people since the Privacy Act of 1974. So I sent it in. I put it up online. I think more than 8 or 10,000 people have followed. And we're going to launch a campaign this week, because more than 300 million people have that right. And people need to understand that you've got a right to the data, not Elon Musk and DOJ. And we want to know what's happened to it. Has it gone to his artificial intelligence private business, to Grok? Has it been shared with other third parties? The people have a right to know that. And so You know, my grandfather was in politics, and he told me when I was a little boy, he said that duck hunting is a lot of fun until the ducks start shooting back. And I think people are going to insist that our rights be vindicated within American constitutional democracy.
Finally, Congressmember Raskin, your comments on what Chuck Schumer, the ranking Democratic member in the U.S. Senate, did, both supporting what was going to be called, the Trump administration threatened to call it, the Schumer shutdown, but actually not so much that as having said to the end he would not go along with it, then switching and the rifts in the Democratic Party now.
Well, I took a very strong position against that continuing resolution, which was packed with more the efforts to dismantle the American social safety net, attacks on Medicaid, attacks on health care. And it also provided, and this was very troubling to me, retroactive validation, at least implicitly, of all of the assaults on the federal agencies and on the federal workers. So there was no way I could go along with it. Schumer took an opposite position after different twists and turns in his journey. But I've got to say, Amy, what troubled me the most resembled what troubled me the most about what happened to us when Donald Trump showed up for the joint session of Congress. It's that we did not have a unified plan across the House and the Senate within the Democratic Party to decide what to do. And I had said I would stick with any unified plan we had. We could boycott it. We could hold up signs. We could stage a walkout, whatever. But we needed to have a plan. We needed to call a play. And I think that's the real political sin here, that House and Senate Democrats are acting like we occupy different galaxies. We've got to get together and decide what our common front and what our common strategy is. I'm an old, you know, washed up football quarterback. It's like going out onto the field without any play at all.
So do you think Schumer should step down as the ranking Democrat of the Senate?
You know, they're going to go through that. I think we're going through a period of tremendous upsurge and ferment and change in terms of political leadership across the board. And because we've been so separated, the Senate and the House Democrats, I really know very little about the internal dynamics that led to what took place there. So I'll reserve judgment on that. But I will say this is a moment where new political leadership is popping up everywhere, and that's all to the good.
Congressmember Jamie Raskin of Maryland, top Democrat on the House Judiciary Committee, former constitutional law professor. Thanks so much for joining us. Coming up, we'll speak to the ACLU, which sued President Trump after he invoked the Alien Enemies Act of 1798 for the first time since World War II, back in 30 seconds.
Last spring is in the streets again. Too many seasons gone by. We moved to cruise and stared ourselves, hoping to find someone half blind, somebody who will make us new, to hold in the night and guard us from fright. While in our very city there lives a real
folk musician Nora Brown with Stephanie Coleman singing The Unicorn last week at the Kennedy Center. In the middle of their performance, they unfurled banners saying reinstate queer programming and creativity at the Kennedy Center must not be suppressed in protest of Trump's takeover of the Kennedy Center. On Thursday night, Vice President J.D. Vance was booed. President Trump is expected to attend the Kennedy Center today. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. We turn to look more at President Trump invoking the Alien Enemies Act of 1798 for the first time since World War II. On Saturday, Trump used the order to deport 137 Venezuelan immigrants to El Salvador, claiming they were all members of Tren de Aragua, a gang which Trump has labeled a terrorist organization. The deportation flights came despite a temporary restraining order from U.S. District Judge James Boasberg, who said, quote, any plane plane containing these folks that is going to take off or is in the air needs to be returned to the United States. Those people need to be returned to the United States, he said. But the Trump administration appeared to ignore the order and allowed the planes to continue to El Salvador. Salvadoran President Nayib Bukele, a Trump ally, tweeted, "Oopsie, too late." The comment was then retweeted by U.S. Secretary of State Marco Rubio and the White House Communications Director Stephen Chung. White House Press Secretary Karoline Leavitt said, quote, "A single judge in a single city cannot direct the movements of an aircraft full of foreign alien terrorists who were physically expelled from U.S. soil," she said. We're joined now by Lee Gelernt, Deputy Director of the ACLU Immigrants' Rights Project. On Saturday, he argued the motion that led to the temporary restraining order blocking the Trump administration from removing the immigrants from the U.S. using the Alien Enemies Act. Can you respond to what the Trump administration said, that this judge doesn't have the right to stop these people from being deported?
Yeah, sure. Thanks for having me again. This is a very, very dangerous statement. I think we're on very dangerous ground generally. Federal courts have the right, the duty to police what the executive branch is doing if they violate the law. And that's exactly what's happening here. Is this is ultimately a separation of powers case. As you were talking about with the congressman before, Congress could not have been clearer. They are granting this authority to the president. I mean, it's over 200 years ago, but granting this authority to the president only if there's a foreign government or foreign nation involved. That's not what's going on here. So the president has overstepped the authority Congress has given him. So it's creating a classic separation of powers question. The federal courts have to be able to say you've overstepped the law. So federal courts can review whether the Alien Enemies Act is being used illegally, and they have to. In terms of defying the court order and sending the planes anyway and not turning them around, you know, we're trying to get to the bottom of that. The government filed what they called a clarification notice yesterday that left more questions than it answered. And so we filed something at 2:15 in the morning last night asking the court to order the government to file sworn declarations stating whether they had defied the court's order by not turning around planes after the court issued the order. In both cases, the federal court is on solid, established ground to review what the administration is doing.
Didn't the same thing happen with the Brown assistant professor? She is from India. She'd been in this country for years, and she was coming from she is from Lebanon. She was visiting family, and she was deported when a judge said no.
Yeah, so I'm not involved in that case, so I don't know the specifics, but I know that there are serious allegations there, and the judge is looking into it and is very concerned. So, you know, we hope that the administration is not outwardly, explicitly defying court orders and claiming they have the right to do that. That would put us on, you know, one step further to what many people would view as a constitutional crisis, just deciding they are not going to listen to the federal courts. So, you know, we will try and get to the bottom of what's going on in the Alien Enemies Act case. We'll see what the government files, what the court does, you know, and we'll leave it there for the moment. But all the indications look like they defied the court order. But the bigger question, as you've noted, is, can the Alien Enemies Act now be used? It's only been used three times in our country's history, all during declared wars, the War of 1812, World War I, and World War II. And that's not surprising because this is a very serious authority that Congress has given the president, but Congress limited it to when there's a declared war with another country or another country is invading us. Not any time the president decides some gang is so dangerous, I'm going to invoke a wartime authority. The minute we start using wartime authorities during peacetime, we're on a slippery slope to a very dangerous place.
Lee Gelernt, can you also talk about the ACLU's work fighting Trump's use of Guantanamo to hold immigrants? On Friday, you argued on behalf of foreign nationals the Trump administration is trying to send to Guantanamo. Now, it looks like they have cleared people from Guantanamo at this point, and I'd like to ask if you know why, and is El Salvador, the supermax prison that is run by the president, a Trump ally, where gross human rights violations have taken place, has this new prison in El Salvador become, has this prison in El Salvador become the new Guantanamo?
Yeah, well, thanks for asking about that, Amy. So, as you mentioned, I argued the Alien Enemies Act case on Saturday, but the day before I argued the Guantanamo case in a long, long hearing. And ultimately, the judge decided not to rule for us only because Guantanamo had been cleared out at that point, and there was no imminent, at least imminent indication to him that people were being sent back to Guantanamo. It's very coincidental that every time we're going to go before a federal judge on Guantanamo, they clear it out. So I think that the litigation's having the effect of forcing them to back down in a way. And so we'll see if they send people back there. But your point about is El Salvador the new Guantanamo? It may be, and I hope not, because as bad as Guantanamo is, sending these Venezuelan men to a Salvadoran prison is really going to put them in immediate harm. I mean, we stressed that to the judge, and the judge fortunately understood that and acted quickly. And as many of you have probably seen, there was a video released of how the men were treated when they got to El Salvador. And I think that only reinforces that the judge was correct to act quickly. I think that there's probably going to be, if this Alien Enemies Act invocation is upheld, anybody can be designated an alien enemy because the government is making the dangerous argument that federal courts can't review. So any immigrant can then find themselves in a Salvadoran prison. We will try to stop this, obviously, and we need those men to be brought back if the court order was defied.
And is the U.S. responsible if they are abused there in Salvador? I mean, this goes to Democratic and Republican presidents of the United States over in charge of Guantanamo, right? And the whole call for Guantanamo to be closed is that it's used as an extrajudicial place where people can be sent and it's not clear who's in charge of them. But that's the same with Salvador. Once they're put into this prison, who's responsible? Does the U.S. bear any more responsibility?
Well, I think the U.S. always bears responsibility if they illegally deport people and then they're ultimately put in danger and harmed. You know, we'll see how the court reacts to this if, in fact, they defied the court order. But I think the key for us going forward is that no one else is sent, and we also try and deal with the people who were sent to get them back any way we can, especially if the court order was defied. But, yeah, the United States is under strict obligations not to send anybody to be persecuted or tortured anywhere. It would have been bad enough if these people were sent to Venezuela because they were fleeing danger there and have asylum claims, when most of them that we know, at least are named plaintiffs. We obviously don't know all the people because the government's doing it in secret, but absolutely it's the government's obligation not to send people to persecution or torture. There's no question these Salvadoran prisons, these people are in imminent danger.
Legal Arm, before we end, I wanted to ask you about, you're arguing some of the most high-profile immigration cases during the first Trump administration, including one to stop Trump's Muslim travel ban that he instituted within weeks of coming first into office. Now the Trump administration is reportedly considering a new, broader travel ban. The New York Times is reporting the ban could impact the citizens of as many as 43 countries. Your response?
Yeah. So, as everyone knows, the Supreme Court narrowly upheld the first Muslim ban. So given that there's Supreme Court precedent, I think we're going to have to wait to see what is actually issued by the president and decide whether it complies with the Supreme Court's ruling or not before we can decide what we're going to do. So we'll wait and see. But I think our first step is going to be assessing whether, under the Supreme Court's precedent, this is lawful or not.
And birthright citizenship going to the Supreme Court, what this means?
Right. We'll have to see how the Supreme Court acts. I mean, the pace, I think the difference between the first Trump administration and the second is the first Trump administration, the pace was very, very fast. But here is that much greater. And so there's a lot going on. And I think that's part of what the administration is doing, is trying to wear down people, either scare them into not resisting or wear them down. We'll keep fighting on all these fronts. We've been preparing for a while for this, and we'll just keep plugging along. And I would urge people not to give up on the federal courts, but I also think that everything cannot be done through the courts. So people, if they think what's happening is illegal, really need to get out there and say so.
And finally, the dismantling of the government and what it means for the cases you've been involved with for the last years, particularly around the separation of families and now seeing families being incarcerated again. But these children, how many are still left? And what does the dismantling of government agencies, how does that affect your work to try to still get these kids back to their families?
Yeah, so we're monitoring that very closely, and I appreciate you raising that, because I don't think the public realizes there are hundreds, maybe up to 1,000 little children still not with their parents now, 6 years later, maybe 7 years later. You know, we got this injunction stopping the family separation policy in 2018, but we're still looking for many of the families, trying to get them back together. We hope that the Trump administration takes very seriously that they're under a court-ordered settlement to reunify these families. Things have been moving slower, but we're not at the point now where we can say the administration is explicitly saying we're not going to comply with this order. But we are monitoring very closely, and we are very worried about finding the remaining families and getting them back together. You know, as anybody knows, any parent knows, and all the medical associations say, every day the child is not with the parent is causing harm.
Lee Gelernt, thanks so much for being with us, Deputy Director of the ACLU Immigrants' Rights Project. Coming up, we look at why some Democrats are calling on Chuck Schumer to step down as a top Democrat in the Senate after he voted with Republicans to help avert a government shutdown. Back in 30 seconds. By the Cranberries. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. Senator Chuck Schumer is facing mounting calls to step down as the Democrat Senate leader after he voted in favor of Republican spending package Friday, which has been described as a blank check for the White House to keep defunding and dismantling government agencies and services. Groups including Indivisible and Pass the Torch have since called for Schumer to step aside. On Friday, 11 young activists with Sunrise Movement were arrested at Schumer's D.C. office as they urged him not to, quote, compromise on our lives and futures ahead of the vote. The other Democratic senators who voted with Schumer to avert a government shutdown were Catherine Cortez Masto, Dick Durbin, John Fetterman, Kirsten Gillibrand, Maggie Hassan, Gary Peters, Brian Schatz, Jean Shaheen, and Independent Senator Angus King. This is Senator Schumer.
Mr. President, I believe it is my job to make the best choice for the country to minimize the harms to the American people. Therefore, I will vote to keep the government open and not shut it down.
We're joined right now by Waleed Shaheed. He's a Democratic strategist whose new piece on Substack is headlined, Schumer says Trump is an existential threat, then surrenders anyway. Waleed was previously the spokesperson for Justice Democrats and former senior advisor for the campaigns of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and Jamal Bowman. Welcome back to Democracy Now! It's great to have you with us. Why don't you respond to what Schumer did?
I think I've been involved in politics for about a decade, and this was one of the most utterly embarrassing strategic blunders on behalf of the Democrats that I've seen. Chuck Schumer, it would be one thing if House Democrats weren't going to fight, but they had House Democrats in vulnerable swing districts who took hard votes that they're going to have to answer for their constituents on. And then Schumer led them in a direction as if he was going to hold up the vote on this. and then surrendered at the last minute. And I think that, you know, they've spent, the Democrats and Chuck Schumer have spent a year warning the American people about Project 2025, warning people that democracy would be under existential threat under Donald Trump. And now with Elon Musk controlling Doge, what they're doing is Project 2025 on steroids. So you don't say there's a fire and then you give the arsonist a match and gasoline, and that's effectively what Chuck Schumer did. It's like if Democrats were rowing a boat and they had one person rowing on the left side, and then the person on the right side just stopped rowing, and then they wonder why they're not moving. They're moving or they're staying still. Or they're going in circles. And this is just one of the things that, you know, people are really angry, and I think more than ever we need ordinary citizens, ordinary Americans involved in our politics, involved, engaged in politics, because the Democratic leadership, it is clear they're not going to stand up and fight against Trump and Musk in the way that grassroots Democrats want them to. I think what Chuck Schumer did, I have few words for it.
I mean, if he had signaled he was going to do that all along, that would be different. You would just differ with him supporting it, right? Yeah. But it was that he suggested he was going to vote against this. What did he say in a New York Times op-ed? He called Republicans a crowd of Trump sycophants and MAGA radicals who seem to want to burn everything to the ground, and accused Trump of wanting full control over government spending. Yet by supporting the Republican bill, wasn't he giving that power to Trump and Musk?
Now, it makes no sense. They had a chance. Democrats had a chance to tell the nation that the Republicans and Donald Trump were shutting down the government in order to protect Elon Musk, one of the wealthiest men in the world. That could have been the message over the next few weeks. And instead, they folded and let the flooding the zone and the chaos continue. Schumer went in the Times and gave what I thought was a totally nonsensical interview, where he said, our goal is to make the Republicans unpopular so that the fever breaks, that if we can get Trump's approval down under 40%, then soon Republicans will come to the table and negotiate with Democrats. And Schumer cited 2005 and 2017 as examples of that. We are not in 2005 or 2017. We are in the era of Project 2025 run by Elon Musk. And I don't think Schumer, politics is about knowing what time it is. And I frankly don't think that Schumer knows what time it is.
I want to ask you about calls mounting for New York Congressmember Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez to challenge Schumer in his next primary election. She spoke on CNN about why she opposed the spending bill.
This turns the federal government into a slush fund for Donald Trump and Elon Musk. It sacrifices congressional authority, and it is deeply partisan. And so to me, it is almost unthinkable why Senate Democrats would vote to hand the few pieces of leverage that we have away for free when we've been sent here to protect Social Security, protect Medicaid, and protect Medicare.
Do you think Congressmember AOC should challenge Schumer?
I think someone should. You know, that's her decision to make, but he's not up for primary until 2028, so we have a lot of work to do between now and 2028 to make that happen. My thing is the main thing we need is constituents in states like New York, constituents in all the places where the senators voted with Republicans on this continuing resolution.
Both New York senators did, Gillibrand and Schumer.
Also, we need people to stand up, go to their offices, make calls. You can join a group like Indivisible, Move On, Working Families Party, the DSA. There are many groups getting involved, and I think that Democratic leaders need to hear way more from their constituents. They snatched the ball from grassroots Democrats. On this, grassroots Democrats were ready to make a play here, ready to march in one direction. And Hakeem Jeffries had the House unified around something, and then Chuck Schumer divided Democrats. And now we're spending today all over the news talking about Chuck Schumer's surrender, his blunder, instead of talking about what Elon Musk is doing to the government.
So, in this last minute, what can ordinary people do who aren't congressmembers, who aren't senators? What difference does it make what actions people take?
I think senators and members of Congress need to hear way more from their constituents about the dangers of what it means for Senate Democrats to give up on this. People should be calling their senators, their members of Congress. People should be showing up to their office. They can go to websites like indivisible.org. They can join their local Working Families Party or DSA chapter. They can nominate a candidate through Justice Democrats. But the number one thing that I think people need to do is call their member of Congress and tell them that they don't think Chuck Schumer is up to the job, and they're angry at what his decision was to sell out grassroots Democrats in order to fund and support the Trump government, which they've warned us is an existential crisis to our country.
And Schumer's fear that it would be called the Schumer shutdown, and that a shutdown could even give more power to the executive?
I was so surprised that the federal union representing federal workers said that they were against Schumer's decision on this. These unions don't take these decisions.